You're muted.
Please unmute.
Okay. The karmic ties of family and of nations. In the words of H.P. Blavatsky, the law of karma is the ultimate law of the universe. Every self-conscious being in the universe, without exception, is subject to the law of karma. Every being in possession of individual self-consciousness and the intelligent power of choice is a creator of karmic causes. Karma is the law of self-created destiny, and everything in the universe proceeds according to that law. It can be good or bad, positive or negative, depending entirely on the nature of the causes we set in motion. It is entirely impersonal, yet it is entirely just and fair in its working. The law of karma applies to everything in the manifested universe. As well as individual karma, there is also family karma, group karma, national karma, racial karma, planetary karma, and beyond that. The first great result of karmic action is in the incarnation into physical life. The birth-seeking entity, consisting of desires and tendencies, presses forward towards incarnation. It is governed in the selection of its seat of manifestation by the law of economy. Whatever is the ruling tendency, that is to say, by whatever group of affinities is strongest, those affinities will lead it to whatever group of affinities is strongest. Those affinities, I'm repeating myself, I lost my place, sorry. Whatever is the ruling tendency, that is to say, whatever group of affinities is strongest, those affinities will lead it to the point of manifestation at which there is the least opposition. It incarnates in those surroundings most in harmony with its karmic tendencies and all the effects of actions contained in the karma so manifesting will be experienced by that individual. This governs the station of life, the sex, the conditions of the irresponsible years of childhood, the constitution with the various diseases inherent in it, and in fact, all those determining forces of physical existence which are ordinarily classed under the terms heredity and national characteristics. It is really the law of economy which is the truth underlying these terms and which explains them. Take, for instance, a nation with certain characteristics. These are the plane of expansion for any entity whose greatest number of affinities are in harmony with those characteristics. The incoming entity, following the law of least resistance, becomes incarnated in that nation, and all karmic effects following such characteristics will accrue to the individual. This will explain what is the meaning of such expressions as the karma of nations, and what is true of the nation will also apply to the family and caste. If we look at William Q. Judge's booklet called Aphorisms on Karma, and particularly number 29, we'll get a better look and a better understanding. It says race karma influences each unit in the race through the law of distribution. National karma operates on the members of the nation by the same law, more concentrated. Family karma governs only with the nation where families have been kept pure and distinct. Or in any nation where there is a mixture of family, as obtains in each Kali Yuga period. Family karma is in general distributed over a nation. But even at such periods, some families remain coherent for long periods. And then the members feel the sway of family karma. The word family may include several smaller families. A family or a group or a race or a nation, and even a planet like our Earth, are collective aggregates of individual souls. Each of those souls has its own karma, but the collective karma is the combined total karma of all the souls in that particular group. None of us exists separately or independently. We think and speak of our own karma. And in a sense, that is not a bad expression. But the reality is that our karma is part and parcel of a bigger karma, working itself out in various directions and expressions. It is true that we all have a lot in life. It is our karmic lot, our karmically determined allotment of situations, circumstances, and experiences. We should always strive for the best, but when we can just not succeed as we would like to in certain areas of life, no matter how hard or often we try or what we do, we should accept it as an indication of our karma and be thankful and content for what we do have, rather than frustrated and depressed over what we do not or cannot have. No amount of positive thinking, creative visualizations, affirmations, or prayers can alter your karma lot in life. This is not fatalism. It is the law of self-created destiny. In the past, you created your present. And in the present, you are creating your future. Karma, therefore, is essentially, in the last analysis, a doctrine of free will. For naturally, the entity which initiates a movement or action, spiritually, mentally, psychologically, or physically, is responsible thereafter in the shape of consequences and effects that flow therefrom, and sooner or later recoil upon the actor or mover. Of course, it is true to a certain extent, since everything is interlocked, interlinked, and interblended with everything else, and that nothing and no being can live unto itself alone, that other entities are of necessity in smaller or lesser degree, and they are affected by the causes or motions initiated by any other individual entity. But such effects or consequences on entities other than the prime mover are only indirectly or morally compelling power. In the true sense of the word, moral. An example of how one entity can affect another in the manner just spoken of is given in what is meant by family karma as contrasted with one's own individual karma. That is to say, the network or web of circumstances and events which belong to the family of which he is a part. Or again, national karma, the series of consequences pertaining to that nation of which he is an individual. Or again, the racial karma pertaining to the race of which the individual is an integral part. The reason for the secondary series of consequences is not different, however, when we go to the roots of things, from action initiated by the individual himself. Because the doctrine of karma also sets forth that the family or the nation or the race to which such individual entity belongs is so on account of the karmic consequences or effects originally initiated by that individual, which brought him into that situation or set of circumstances. He himself built for himself in some past time incarnation in that family or in that nation or race. So in a very real sense, the family or national or racial karma in which he finds himself involved, he is his own particular degree responsible for it. So really it all comes back to the same thing. Rooted as man's monadic essence is in the boundless all. And furthermore, in the highest and most spiritual aspects of the boundless all, it is also seen at once that the universal karma of cosmic being is therefore the ultimate background of the karma of the individual, because the individual is inseparable from that universe. Indeed, things are what they are because they compose a vast aggregate, indeed incomprehensible in its universal reaches, of cooperating energies and powers of which everyone is but an expression of karmic consequences. And this is but another manner of saying that everything that is collectively and distributively in general and particular is but the consequence or consequences of actions or movements which have preceded the present state of things. And furthermore, that the present state of things will be succeeded by another web or network of incoming and interlocking energies and forces, which will be the resultants of consequences in every sense of the word, and what exists at present, both in the universe and in the particular. And lastly, we are the makers and carvers of our own destiny, our family, our race, and our nation. We are at the present time traversing the destiny or undergoing it, which we have in past times in other lives have carved out for ourselves. Both in character and body, we reap what we sow, as the New Testament of Christians puts it. And this expresses very graphically and briefly the essential meaning of the doctrine of karma. Once again, the topic for today, the karmic ties of families and of nations.
Thank you. So basically what we're looking at in regards to the karmic ties of family and nations, it starts out with our own free will, our choice. And how many people actually realize that karma doesn't just affect the individual? Because the fundamental propositions of theosophy talk about the interrelations between people, that is what causes their karma. That, and then when we're reincarnated, we have to be responsible, because what we have created in this life is from a past life, not necessarily the immediately preceding one. But whenever the time is ripe, whenever the aggregates of characteristics have to be expressed, then karmically we come into a life, and we come into a family that we have lessons we have to learn individually and in that family, and the family in regards to the nation and then to the world. So Theosophy puts forth this idea of universal brotherhood and this idea of karma in relation to the ties of family and nations is a definite example, because what we do in our own little corner of the world can have a ripple effect. And we never know where the interactions are in our family, out on the street, or whatever. We don't know how that will express itself. So this is a huge topic, and we want to get started with the questions and discussions. Please remember to unmute yourself. SL, unmute.
In the forum presentation, the idea was presented that with the economy of nature, the incarnating ego, with its attracted to certain tendencies from previous lives, finds itself in the family or the nation, which has the predominance of those tendencies. And yet, we read in the New Testament, for example, of Jesus saying, "Come ye out and be separate," as though we are, having found ourselves amongst this family or nation with these tendencies, which we have now, we're supposed to be separate from them. How does that work out? What does that mean to be separate from the very tendencies that we were attracted to begin with?
Well, those tendencies are creating the lessons that we have to learn. And if we are born into a family, and we know that there are people that are born into a family and don't really feel as though they belong there. It's like, did life make a mistake? I'm totally different from any of my family members. Or even we can look at, I am not any way like the country that I was born into. I'm just way too different. And these are lessons. Even though there are these commonalities, these tendencies that have brought us into a family, it could be a lesson the family has to learn by dealing with that individual. And it could be that individual's lesson that they have to learn by being born into that family. So being born into a family doesn't necessarily mean that you're this alike. It just means this is where you initially will be learning the lessons and the other people learning from you. Yes.
Just to follow up on that. So it's the initial tendencies that draw us into a certain family. But since those bundle of tendencies change, and in fact, every 7 years it is said they change, we may find that over time we become less and less like the family or nation or race in which we were originally attracted because of the natural changing of our tendencies through life.
Yes, so, and it all goes back to the choices that we've made in the past, because that is what is going to revivify some of this aggregate of tendencies, which are called skandhas. So these, you know, each choice we make over the course of time will create new ones. And the older ones, as was said, will eventually disappear, for lack of a better word. Any other comments or questions? Yes, MDW.
From what I'm hearing, the karma that's coming to us, we have no control over. You know, it's coming to us. And it was said that everything is created in the moment, so that the problem is, how do we change that karma? And it's stated in the Bhagavad Gita that there's a certain attitude one must take when walking this path. You know, that you know, selflessness needs to be understood, and not being attached to one's labor or one's deeds, and sacrifice everything up to that which we understand as being universal in our conception, which is everyone, for all one. So karma is as it is, and we need to understand why it is, but the only thing we have control over is now.
Mm-hmm. Well, we do have choices, and we can't, and the fact that maybe life has not dealt us, you know, a happy existence. But the thing is, we can't say that life has not dealt us a bad existence. We have not dealt ourselves a good existence, because we can choose, no matter what karma throws at us, our future karma is based upon the choices that, as was said, are being made in the present now. And if we are not happy with the way things are, and knowing that it was our responsibility in the past that have made it an unhappy existence, we can choose to change our thoughts, because our thoughts are where the idea of action has taken place. So when we make these choices based upon what has been brought forward by our previous choices, then we can change a future karma, because we are accepting what has happened to us. And just as was mentioned about the Bhagavad Gita, what is coming to us is our duty based upon a previous choice we have made. And then a future choice can be changed, because we are aware that we are self-conscious beings and we can make those choices.
Question
here.
So we were wondering, is it bad karma to not believe in the law of karma? We know people who absolutely feel that whatever if they get away with something, they get away with it, that there's no consequences as long as the authorities don't find out about it. And it's actually pretty common. So we're wondering if that's a real serious karmic impediment to not believe in the efficacy and the consequences of the law of karma.
Whether we believe in karma or not, it is the choice that is being made. If somebody believes in a one life, they don't believe in karma, they don't believe in reincarnation, and they're trying to get as much as they can in this life, then that will come back to them in the future. Let us just get to this chat. The line just mentioned, come out and be ye separate, is the major premise used by Old Order Amas to be separate from all but members of their religious sect. Their natural separation is called isolation from the main body of mankind, in ways often both negative, biological, and positive for them. The group karma for the Old Order Amish must be quite unique among mankind. So one can take that idea of come out and be separate in different ways. Because those of us that are coming to Theosophy meetings, to ULT meetings, in essence, we are separate. Most of us are, unless one has been grateful enough to be born into a family of Theosophists. But most of us are not, karma hasn't been that good to us to be born into a Theosophical family. So we are separate. And we think the idea of the Amish being separate is like a larger idea, because they do separate themselves. They grow their own food. They very rarely, we understand, have to come into to obtain different goods. So the idea of being separate certainly has its extremes. There's those of us that are in, as we said, a family that maybe doesn't understand our way of thinking, or it can be in a more extreme idea like the Amish. So there are different things, that different extremes of it. TK? Unmute,
please.
This idea of stand ye out and be ye separate, if we take it to the fullness, the Mahatma stands out from the human race, operates from the universal place that the highest human being can do, and yet he participates with the human race in their karma. There's this statement that the Mahatma takes on the karma of the race. So let's back that up for a second. We're born into a family, and there are reasons for it. We participated in it. We invited it, the conditions in which we're born into, we share with that family. Now, come time when, maybe the light turns on and we find certain ideas that we hold to be true, maybe different from our family, that could be the first step in a certain kind of inner growth. So, but this idea of stand ye out and be ye separate in terms of your personal view, your choices that you make, that does not mean stand out from your family and turn your back on them so you can go be more spiritual with another family. You're with that family for a reason. There are certain duties. And so for instance, with the Amish, with all due respect to them, their motive is as pure, surely, as any can, but there could be missed opportunity to be of service to nation. Stand ye out and be ye separate from your nation, and throw and go somewhere else and throw spears at your own nation. That's not what they mean about it. That they mean grow in certain ways that you're going to be of greater service. The idea that what you do to the least of your brothers, that you do unto me, which is a universal statement. That which you don't do to the least of your brothers when you could have, you're not doing it for the higher self either. So it's a consideration.
Yes. When this term come ye out and be ye separate, is if we really look at it, there can be somebody could be living in a bad neighborhood, yet they have this idea of universal brotherhood on their mind. They were born into that family, into that neighborhood, into that city for a reason. And by being separate and realizing the spiritual nature of all beings, there are a lot of folks in these poor neighborhoods that are helping. They're getting food in. They're activists for different issues. So by being separate doesn't necessarily mean, as was said, doesn't necessarily mean that one ignores the family, ignores the neighborhood. What it means is that you can be different and still be of help and still love your neighbor. And by showing them how you are, it can make a change in different aspects of people's lives. JCS.
Well, the thought occurs, maybe the duty is not to be so self-centered that we're looking at personal issues. I don't belong here. My way of thinking is correct. Theosophy is correct. The rest of them are all wrong. Perhaps the duty is to be where you're planted, to open up your heart in loving compassion, as was just said, but to listen and to learn, so that embedded in the variety of belief systems in a family, we may find a common core and may have a greater understanding of why we all as soul came together, why we seem to be exhibiting many different views on faith or religion or some other aspect of culture. And therefore, we may be able to assist the others as we learn more about what's the commonality. Let's not look at the differences. And let's not be so self-centered, because then we fall into the trap of separateness where my way or the highway.
Hello?
Okay, you can go.
Yes, I'm pretty sure many of us, you know, have heard the term manifest destiny or carpe diem, and I understand the karmic sort of interpretation of sort of from an individual perspective. But what's the perspective when there is a mass colonization or a mass enslavement or degradation of a particular race when it comes to karma? Is one to say, based on sort of the principles and understanding of karma as we're looking at it from an individual perspective, that it is the manifest destiny or the karmic sort of reality for this particular people that they be in that condition?
We had a little bit of difficulty hearing what you were saying, but we're gathering that if there's a group of people that maybe are really poor and don't have much in the way of materiality that can sustain them.
No.
No. Sorry. Well, I didn't hear. JCS, can you comment on that?
Yeah, when we're thinking about periods of history, of duration, especially in the United States, and the notions of manifest destiny, where somehow it's this right of a small group, Anglo-Saxons in particular, to take over the world or to conquer, quote, lesser people, or the entire issue of genocide perpetrated culturally and physically versus the indigenous, or the entire issue of slavery. Everyone here at the meeting this morning was born centuries after or decades after much of all that was perpetrated. And as we come to a study of the philosophy, we each are invited to consider the flaws of the karma that's exhibited in manifest destiny and genocide and slavery and these incredible causeless hate issues. And each, as individuals, apart from a meeting like this, is invited to consider, what is it that I can do with my life force in this incarnation to be anti-racist, to be anti the kind of nationalism that's really horribly demonstrated in Manifest Destiny, And so we act as best we can in our spheres of influence to ameliorate all the effects of this past history, and yet to try to be as detached and calm and loving and compassionate as we can among and between ourselves. If we get lost in the passion and the pain, how can we be of service to ameliorate this group collective karma that we all face?
So that's the whole idea of coming out and being separate, that person who is trying to remain calm and compassionate. So, SL.
We think the question also had the aspect of what is the karmic responsibility, or what is the karma of those individuals that are born into situations where they are the victims of slavery, of persecution? Are they somehow responsible for it? Is it a punishment? Well, once again, karma is a reaction of what we do and what we didn't do. So being in that situation for some people could be the negative consequences of how they acted as a group in the past. Or it could be a learning experience of what they need to do to make things better. It's that experience that wakes them up, and through their awakening, they help the larger group get rid of those conditions. It could also be that for some, it's their mission or their karma to be born in that situation because they are much stronger and much more advanced and have the opportunity in that condition to help those people, to help those souls improve the situation and improve the world we live in. So you can't judge necessarily why one is experiencing the karma, the negative, whether it's individual, national, racial. We don't know exactly what they did because it's individual, but we can say that it's the natural result of causes set up, and therefore we need to own it. We need to assume responsibility for it, not just those who are the victims, but those who are the perpetrators.
Thank you for that explanation. And one thing we did want to point out, we've been talking about negative karma, and there is positive karma as well. And one of the things that we did want to say too is that people can be born together out of love. There could be such a compassionate attachment with someone else that they need to come back together. So, and then we always realize who that person is, if we're aware, is that when we meet them, there's an instant connection. So TK, you had your hand up.
Indeed, the philosophy does teach that when those situations in history arise, when there's the conquering race and there's that race or group that was conquered, the effect of that is that the conquered group will be reincarnated into the conquering group. And the purpose behind that is not for revenge, it's to bring with them their experience to share and to teach and to have the inherent wisdom of the experience so that we can all learn from it. So there are those, in particular, Mr. Judge says, with regard to American Indians, who are reincarnated into America with exactly that experience, bring it into America. Who knows where any one of us or where all of us were in our previous lives.
Can I?
Go ahead.
So I'm still trying to wrap my head around this idea or this definition of karma. So it definitely seems to be a collective group understanding of it, and I appreciate, you know, helping me understand that. But is it to me, it almost seems like this is man's sort interpretation on a very basic level of God. If you look at sort of, for me, the reaction or the principles of karma, there's this celestial or this ethereal sort of force that recognizes and sees all the good that you've done or didn't do. And as a result, there's this regulating and ultimate, this consequence or outcome as a result of that. And you see that in folklore, you see that in the Tooth Fairy, you see that in Christmas, and you see that common theme, well, you know, what you do in return is what you'll get, or, you know, a man, you know, reaps what he sows. So is karma, Eastern philosophy of sort of the God's force, or is it, you know, the God force is the manifestation of karma? I'm just, because it seems to be some parallels on karma for me. I hope that makes sense.
Because we couldn't really hear clearly, we'll go MDW.
Now we will have to pass.
SL.
If we may try to summarize the previous question and contribution. The individual was asking basically, is karma the nature of karma is that it's an external force, or it's the force of gods or beings that reward us for the good we do or punish us for the ill that we do, or punish us for what we don't do? And so what is the basis of karma? So perhaps if we understand that everything in nature comes from one source, that there's an underlying unity, whether we can call it the deific principle, which unites all and is the source of all. And karma is the manifestation of that underlying reality in nature, such that nature is constantly restoring balance and harmony wherever it is disturbed. That's a natural law. What goes up comes down, equal and opposite reaction. As you sow, that shall you reap. Now, when it comes to a human, and that's in all the kingdoms, but when it comes to a human being, we have free will to act. And if we act in such a way that disturbs that harmony of nature based on the unity of all, we receive certain consequences, the effect of which is to try to bring us back into harmony. If we work with it, then we benefit. We become stronger through it. We experience contentment or peace, if you will, a well-being, if we work with it. So it's the natural consequences. There is no karma for us unless we make it and feel its effects.
Thank you. MDW.
Yes, we also have to remember that we are dynamic beings, and we produce electromagnetic currents. We have one around our body, but we project it out from ourselves. It's electromagnetic, so that when we have an affinity or an affection or a dislike, that builds up a strong current. And with this attachment, we have a reaction in due time. So that we have to remember that by our thought, word, and deed, we are creating. That's all of electromagnetic impulse that we send out. So we have to remember that we are the generators of the karma. Mm-hmm. We are generators of it. So every action has an opposite and equal reaction, said Albert.
Yes. Yeah. Another. That's one thing with the meaning of karma, is that there's an action and a reaction. the whole idea is to balance out the universe. So if there is something negative that has happened, that has to be balanced out in the universe. Yes, SL.
Very often when we first come to this study, it's a natural tendency to identify with our moral qualities, our good qualities, believe that's who we are, and thereby, through that, form an idea of separateness, which with those that don't have those qualities, and maybe consciously or unconsciously judge them for that. The further we go along, because we become aware of universal brotherhood and our interdependence, life teaches us that if there is injustice, prejudice, hatred, negativity of any kind in the family, nation, or race we find ourselves, it's within us, potentially, in some degree. Likewise with the good. The difference is being aware of that, we can now self-consciously choose, because of that knowledge, how we want to live, what example we want to set, what destiny we want to create for ourselves. So that idea of separateness based on we have this quality and they don't disintegrates as a result of this experience and this study and investigation of ourselves and nature.
Thank you. Yes, TK.
So someone who, you know, just comes along and the first time they introduce themselves or reintroduce themselves to the idea of karma, pretty quickly we can boil it down to pretty much what goes around comes around, whatsoever you sow, you shall reap. But the philosophy of theosophy is very practical philosophy. And what do we do and how do we use karma and what are some of the implications? How do we make it real in our lives? And we think that the philosophy talks a lot about the correlation between personal responsibility and karma. Could we investigate that idea, the correlation between responsibility and karma?
Well, humans are self-conscious beings. And we know that karma is a doctrine of responsibility. So if those choices that we make will come back and that we will have to deal with. So when we're looking at this idea of karma and responsibility, it's, you know, we have to make those choices. But the idea is that we shouldn't be making the choices because we're going to have good karma. We're making those choices because our duty has brought those experiences to us, and we are to make them. This is how we can change a, you know, quote, bad karmic situation, is by making the good choices. But we should do them because they need to be done, not because we're going to get some good karma. We shouldn't expect anything in return. Yes, JCS.
There's also a pitfall in the whole concept of individual responsibility. If we find ourselves considering in a quote, discerning way, that someone else is responsible for their misfortune. And if we find ourselves making judgments about the life conditions of another or a family member or a group of folks, then we're getting a call from spiritual nature to turn within and say, whoa, wait a minute. As soul, am I responsible for being the keeper of my brother? Am I responsible for doing everything in my little sphere of influence to make sure that their spiritual equity, personal equity, that different activities of society and government are equal playing grounds? And if the answer is no, then I have more effort to do to try to make everything in the surrounding, in the collective, as equitable as possible without any attachment to whether or not another soul is taking adequate advantage of the systems around them. And that's quite a task at hand, and is probably a process in which we can explore that that sin of separateness, where we can fall into this trap of who's who in the zoo with who's responsible for what. It's an interesting form of meditation, but it's active meditation, and it's for each of us individually and privately to do.
Yes, and to go along with that, if we're trying to help another, especially if it's a family member, we can only do so much. If we are offering assistance of any sort, whether it be financial, emotional, physical, whatever, and we're doing it with the right motive and not expecting anything in return, if we're making that gift, if we're offering something to them, we can't determine if they are going to accept it or not. And if they're not going to accept it, that's on them. You have done your karmic duty, and if they're not going to go along with suggestions for whatever reason, you have to pull back and detach yourself and say, I did all I could, and if they're not accepting it, so be it. And we have 1 minute left.
And stand ready that as conditions change, to still be an enduring presence of empowering someone else, but allowing their higher power to direct their course of action.
Right. They have the choice as well. So very quick, SL.
So if we find ourselves in a situation where an individual, nation, or group is acting in such a way irresponsibly, for whatever reason, and especially if it's affecting us negatively, we have to perhaps assume under karma that we're there because of what we didn't do or we did do in the past to create that condition, to contribute to that condition where the person acts irresponsibly. Maybe we didn't help them when we could. Maybe we didn't share wisdom and understanding with them, so they were left to their own devices and they made mistakes. So if we're drawn to that, we have to assume that we share some responsibility
yes.
with the other individual.
Thank you very much. And that brings us to the end of our meeting, and we want to thank everyone for joining us. Thank you.
Thank you.